Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Work Trends with Megan and Biro. Whether you're here to network, learn, or share, we want you to have fun. During this live broadcast and Twitter chat, we'll discuss the future of work with smart and entertaining guests who value today's business and its impact on the world of work for the future. Stay tuned, because we start in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so your ears do not deceive you. Megan did not develop a deeper voice overnight. Hi, everyone. My name is Sean Murphy. I am filling in for Megan as she is out on assignment. And I think that today marks a really special day for me because I've been a guest of Work Trends a couple of times, and now I get to be the host. So this is a special moment for me, in part because you guys are a great community. You really come together. You have some great wisdom to share with each other and always eager to learn. So I think today we'll continue that trend. Before we get started, Megan asked that I say thanks to all of the talent culture sponsors, partners, and members, and all the people behind the scenes who make it possible for this show to go live every week. It's not an easy thing to do this weekly. So thank you, everyone, who contributes your time and effort to make this happen. So today's work trends, we are taking on one of my favorite topics. It's a big topic for all of you in the talent culture community. The topic is company culture, but we're going to actually have some nuances in it so that we don't actually just kind of rehash the same topics. Our guest is Larry Sen, or Dr. Larry Sen, and he has brought to our attention the real importance of emotions and how that can actually influence not just the culture, but ultimately our performance as well. Larry's current book is The Mood Elevator, Take Charge of Your Feelings, Become a Better You. It is out now, so I definitely encourage you to check it out. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the concepts. So, Larry, welcome.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Yeah. It's you and I got a chance to meet, I think it was a couple years ago, but, here we are again. Our circles have passed, albeit virtually this time. And I wanted to say thanks for joining us today. So, Larry, let me ask you this. You are a legendary figure in workplace culture, and I'm really curious to know, what is it that you've seen over your time in helping organizations? What are some of the top three cultural pearls of wisdom that leaders need to understand to make a difference in their company and with their people?
Well, I think that one of those, I'm excited because this month, February, is the 40th anniversary of Sen Delaney's founding as the world's first culture-shaping firm. So that's
what?
Something
we've
involved
now?
In 40 years. In fact, it goes back to the history is an interesting one. It'll help answer that question and where the answers come from. I came out of college and with a professor started a more traditional strategy and systems firm. And I found very early on it was easier to decide on change than to get people to change. And that most organizations were like dysfunctional families. They had turf issues and trust issues and politics and resistance to change and bureaucracy. And I really noted that. And what I found was very easy to make change in some companies and virtually impossible in others. And I got my epiphany when Jim Delaney and I, who founded the firm, were hired by a guy named Sam at a place called Walmart to design the original supply chain when he had this passion of bringing goods to rural America. And he was like an evangelist on fire to do this. And it was so easy to work there and such a pleasure because the teams were collaborative. They were open to change. They were trusting. They were willing to try things. They supported each other. They weren't self-serving. They were a part of a higher purpose. At the same time, we were trying to do almost the exact same thing with supply chain at Woolworth in New York. And I'd fly from Bentonville to New York And it would be like going to the morgue. It was like, oh my God, just a bunch of old men. They were old men sitting around a table, and their only purpose seemed to be to maintain the status quo. And I said to myself, you know, that little company's going to take over the world, and this one's going to die. And this this will date me, but this is the 60s. And so I said, I got to find out what this thing is. It didn't even have a name. And I found a professor at USC. I'd gone to UCLA, who had written pulled together a booklet called Readings in Organizational Character. The fact that companies were like people, they developed personalities. And I went to him, I said, Dr. Wolf, I've got to understand what this thing is. This makes the most difference to success than anything else we do. He said, well, everybody knows it's there. They've commented. No one's ever studied it. You have clients. What if we paid your way through the doctoral program? And that began the journey. And it took me about 4 years of running my business and taking courses. They had no such thing as organizational behavior back then. So it was psychology, yeah, anthropology, sociology, as well as my economics and statistics and all to get my business doctorate. But I ended up completing my doctorate as the world's first studies of corporate culture. And it took me another 8 years to found the world's first culture shaping firm, which got me the title, which either makes me feel old or proud of the father of corporate culture. And so that's where it began. So to come back to that question, the central finding of my dissertation was that organizations tend to become shadows of their leaders, whether it's teams, companies, families. There's this phenomenon. In fact, if you look up in Wikipedia, it's attributed to that early research. And so unless you can get a senior level organization behaving the way you want it to be, good luck in trying to create the organization. So people should be more aware. Anybody who's a parent or a leader has a great obligation, not just for what they know, but how they show up each day. In fact, that's where the notion of emotion. So where are you on the mood elevator? Because you can sink a meeting if you come in a bad mood. And
yeah. Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so it's the shadow we cast. I think the other thing is that there are that most companies have done work on values, but like Enron, they hung on the wall. So the hat trick is, how do you get these concepts embedded in people? Because how do you change habits of adults? That was a big question I faced early on, because you do not change work environments, you do not change cultures unless you change the habits of people. And I became fascinated with another thing by Kurt Lewin. Kurt Lewin talked about the fact that organizations are like an organism, but he said that unless people have epiphanies, they won't change. In fact, his quote was, when we're young, we're like a flowing river, and then we freeze. We freeze in these unconscious thought habits, like for me to win, you have to lose. Or in the Midwest, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And so how do you change those? And his belief was, people need to have epiphanies or aha moments, like the guy who's not very healthy, doesn't exercise, doesn't eat right, has a heart attack, and you see him walking around the block eating greens. So I said to myself, well, gee, I'm an engineer by background. Why did I learn to engineer epiphanies around accountability, collaboration, things like that? So there
and
has
can
to be
you do
personal
that? Can you engineer those type of situations to allow for that to those epiphanies to occur?
Absolutely. In fact, I got a message from the wife of the CFO of a large Midwest bank, and she says, I'm not sure who you sent home. I like him. You can keep the other guy.
What was it that you did to help make that come to be? I mean, that's a great compliment to you, know, to you, to be able to help someone have the epiphany that what they're doing isn't necessarily working.
Well, it's interesting. Most change I found back then, it's still true today, is what we call the behavioral model, the kind of Pavlovian or Skinnerian model of you define something like values, then you try to reward that or have awards about that, et cetera. But, you know, you can tell somebody they don't listen and they won't listen. You can tell somebody they're controlling. They can get a 360. That doesn't change them because that's outside in.
Right.
So what has to happen is people have to have their own insights, make their own deep commitments to that. And the way we do that, it's in a team setting, generally beginning with a CEO and senior team or a division president, is to take people off site to really help get their minds right. And part of that is what we call experiential learning. Instead of explaining a concept like collaboration, we'll put them in a game. You're going to play a simple game. And what happens is when you put them under time pressure, it becomes a mirror of their life. People who take over, take over. People who hoard, hoard. All the behaviors are manifest in the exercise. And then you stop it and say, wait a minute, let's go back and reexamine what you did. And it might be a quiet journaling process. How did you play that game? And how is that a mirror of your life? And they go, oh, my God, I took over. My wife told me I did that. My kids told me I did that. You know, my employees tell me I do that. Oh, my God, maybe I should do something about that.
Yeah.
And so it's through series of insights like that that people then take a look at themselves and make change.
So what I'm hearing you say is if we're going to change culture, you know, yes, we can focus on some of the exterior influences on culture, but really if we're going to shift it in the direction that it's going to help the organization and the people be successful, we've got to look at ourselves and raise our self-awareness and understand how we, especially for those who are in a formal leadership role, what those behaviors do in terms of affecting other people and the culture. Would that be a
absolutely.
Fair assessment? Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's pivot a little bit and narrow the focus, because I think what the mood elevator will help us understand is get more into that behavior and its influence. So first of all, tell us about the mood elevator and then what led to the development of it for you guys to really help organizations make those changes that you guys are hired to do.
Well, it's interesting. We discovered there's a set of essential values in any healthy individual team or organization. They are things like making decisions for the greater good, not self-interest. They're like they're being accountable versus blaming and making excuses. And so we do have these insight-based modules around them. But we also discovered something else. When people were kind of at their best, top of their game, that they naturally live these things. So if you think about times when you are feeling confident, secure, resourceful, optimistic, in times like that, it's amazing what you can do, the creativity you have, the influence you have. But think about those times when you're worried, anxious, judgmental, self-righteous, angry. How well do you do then in influencing people, in being creative? What is your thinking like and how clear is it? It's not. And so what began to occur to me is that there is this notion of we all have a best self. We all know we have that. There are times it arises where we're in flow. We're so connected to what we're doing, or the team we're on is so synced that we kind of lose sight of the outside and just are there in flow. I think you can recognize that. You've been there, I'm sure, yourself, Sean, at times.
Yep.
When I'm speaking sometimes, I think, where did that come from? It's almost like we tapped into a universal intelligence. And so we said, well, how can we make a science out of this? Well, the fact is, every moment of every day, we ride this thing we call the mood elevator. At the very top is gratitude, which is an overriding emotion, probably the most powerful next to love. At the bottom is depression, but in between we have all these levels. At the top we've got resourcefulness, we've got curiosity, we've got purpose, we've got those kind of. At the bottom we've got all these other things that plague us every day. So what if we could help people really spend more of their time being at their best, but almost equally important, how we could help people not do damage when they're down. So, for example, have you ever said something to a loved one you wish you could take back? Have you ever written an email you shouldn't have written? Well, I guarantee you are in the lower levels, below the midpoint, which is curiosity on the mood elevator. And if you could have just waited a few minutes and settled down, if you could have, you know, sometimes I'll get an email that pushes my buttons and I'll go write one back and then I'll do save. And I'll look at it the next day or an hour later, and I'll either delete it or say, thank you for letting me know. I'll reward it. And so you can learn, really, to manage this in a sense that you have a better life. You have better relationships. You have better marriages. You have better relationship with kids. You're a better leader. If you can really learn how to spend more time in the upper level and do less damage to yourself and others in the lower level, because you will visit all levels.
Yeah, well, as long as you're human, right, you're going to experience the range of moods here. And for everybody who's listening, one thing that might be helpful for you is if you go to themoodelevator.com, you'll see that there's actually a downloadable version of what Larry's talking about. And you just kind of give you a visual of what it is. At the lower half of this graphic are those moods that certainly can have negative consequences of interactions. And then as you go up the elevator, obviously you get to the more positive moods. So Larry, let me ask you this. So as I'm listening to you talk a little bit about the mood elevator and kind of the range, how much of my mood influences the interactions and the dynamics and the relationships that I have versus just my character? So for example, and this is probably an extreme one, I worked with a manager who had on her team someone who was just really disruptive. I would say that the person was probably somewhat of a narcissist, but I'm not a psychologist, so I couldn't diagnose that. Does a character influence mood, or does mood influence character? Does it matter? And what does that mean for culture and a leader who's trying to harness the goodness in everyone?
Well, a related thought to this has to do with where moods come from and also where behaviors come from. So what's really true is that the theory is this: we come into the world, I have five kids and five grandkids, almost six, one on the way. and when they come in, all of them come into the world, they're so loving and trusting and caring. Even that guy you talked about as a jerk probably was a pretty good baby. And then life happens to us. We begin to have experiences which shape our behaviors. So narcissists begin to learn that the world's all about that, their belief system. It's all in their belief system about what's important. They're important. Others aren't important. And them winning is important. And them being the best and outperforming others is important. And so they probably have they don't have a learning mindset, their fixed mindset, but all that comes from their belief system. But those...
Did we lose you? This is a live show, folks. There you were on a roll there. So while we wait for Larry to join again, a couple things that I'll just share with you is in about 12 minutes, we will be moving to Twitter to actually have our weekly Work Trends Twitter chat, and on it will be Larry, and he'll be certainly interacting with everyone who's participating. So be sure to join us on Twitter. Follow the hashtag WorkTrends, and we'll definitely ask some good questions and make sure that you can ask Larry your own questions. Right now you're hearing me stretch as we wait to have Larry call back in. So in the meantime, one thing that we could do is talk through what some of the great work that Larry has done. So if you check out Larry's website, The Mood Elevator, which is linked to his book, The Mood Elevator, you will find that, one, you can download the Mood Elevator graphic, which I think is a real helpful tool to help you understand more deeply what it is that Larry's talking about. And it looks like Larry's back in. So hold on one second.
Finish my – hello. I'm
all right.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I got so excited with my story, somehow it cut out. So I was talking about the guy in the park bench. And so in the end, he's sitting there and a kid walks by and he says, "Why am I sitting on this bench? I've got these kids that love me at home. I should go home. I'm grateful." So what caused him to ride from depression to gratitude sitting on a park bench? It all was his thinking. So, So it's really our thoughts that create both our behaviors and our thoughts that create our thinking. And so that narcissist, this guy you talked about, has a very faulty belief system, and you can't change that by just telling him to be different. But if he were to get an insight about why he behaves the way he does, and if he changed his thinking, change your thinking, change your life. So I guess that's the response to that.
I like what you're saying there, because I think here's what is so tough about culture, and you know, I'm saying this as I think about, well, okay, I'm talking to the guy who helped us understand what culture is, but culture it's so embedded in our own actions and our interactions that it's really hard to tease out what do we change. But I think what I like about what you're saying is, look, it starts with us, and not just our thinking, but how our thinking drives our behaviors and those interactions, and that's what shapes the culture positively or negatively. Is that a fair kind of summation?
It is, and the shortcut is this: instead of working on 40 different things, you know, what the book is about is work on being your best self, because if you do that, you'll be all those things you want to be when you are your best self. So the notion of take control of your emotions and be a better you, become your best self, is what the theme is. And so, I mean, it's amazing. We have one hospital that has the highest patient satisfaction scores in America, the highest engagement scores in America. And they have a 6-foot wall with a mood elevator on it in the nursing station where the nurses put their tongue depressors on where they are when they come in. And so they think about that. And, you know, Victoria's Secret is the most renowned, you know, retail in the world. You go in the back room of Victoria's Secret store, they got a mood elevator in the wall. So it's a very practical thing. It's one of the many things at San Delaney we teach, but it is a powerful notion and tool in life.
Yeah. So one of the things that I find really fascinating is the role curiosity plays in our interactions. So can you talk about curiosity and why it's such a vital role in changing our moods?
Yes, let me begin with a bold statement I often make to groups. If you can just live life more in curiosity than judgment, you'll have a totally different life. It'll be different. It'll turn out differently. And here's why. There's actually a chapter in the book on curiosity as kind of a stop on the elevator where you don't fall further. So let's say someone you know does something that you don't like or doesn't make sense to you. You've got a choice. You can go to judgment, you can go to anger, you can go to all kinds of things, or you can go to curiosity and say, huh, I wonder how they see this. So if you get the notion that everybody's doing what makes sense to them based on their thinking, and you go to curiosity and seek understanding, then things are different. If something happens in your life, and we've all had things in our life that looked bad, but if you go to curiosity and say, well, what's the lesson in that? What can I learn from that? What can I make of that? Then you'll be fine. And so this whole idea of every time you go to judging somebody or judging a situation, go to learning from that situation and learning and being curious. Carol Dweck's done some fascinating work in the area of growth mindset, her book Mindset. And she says we tend to either have a fixed mindset, which is the know-it-all, which is probably that arrogant guy you talked about earlier, or we have a growth mindset. And today, more than any time in history, we need to have a growth mindset in organizations, to have agility, to have these innovation, to have these things. And so the essence of a growth mindset is living in curiosity, just not being okay to not know, to ask questions, to not be the expert, but just to wonder about things. Does that help?
I think absolutely. And I think even if we apply it to maybe disagreements amongst colleagues or even our personal life, if we look at that disagreement through the lens of curiosity, like, well, what's going on here? What's causing this breakdown? That's a much richer conversation than fueling that difference with either judgmental statements or anger, but just stopping and saying, let's stop here for a second. What's going on? What's causing us to come to these, you know, to have this conflict? Curiosity, I think, I love the fact that you're using that to be able to help us approach our interactions with people in a much richer way than thinking, well, I'm right and you're wrong, or you shouldn't do that, or you should be like me.
Yeah. Yes, in fact, as we work with teams, one of the reason we try to get them to actually tell their crucible stories of their life and why they behave the way they behave and all, is once you really understand somebody, you tend to not assume motives as much. It's assuming motives. We make things up then. We create the stories in our head. And what we say to that what great teams we work with do is they assume positive intention. They assume that everybody in the team really does want to get a good outcome. They may have different ways of doing it. You may not agree with them, but don't assume that they have negative motives. start from the assumption of positive intention and be curious to figure out why they see it that way.
Yeah, yeah. It's a much more satisfying conversation, that is for sure. And it's also a way to kind of cool your own jets when you're asking questions to understand where someone's coming from or what's going on. So, Larry, we've got just a few more minutes here before we head on over to the Twitter chat. And I want to explore a little further with you the mood elevator. You've given some examples of how organizations have incorporated it into kind of their day-to-day rituals or interactions. What are some of the other benefits that you've seen from organizations who've incorporated the mood elevator into their cultures?
They have healthier people. It's interesting when because there's a direct connection between physical well-being and emotional and mental well-being, and so they do that. You'll see higher employee engagement. You'll see higher. One of our clients, USAA, the military insurance company, has the highest customer loyalty in America. Another company has the highest customer service in America. So you'll see they'll be more purposeful. So CVS stopped selling cigarettes. They went through the process and created their vision of pathway to health, a new way in healthcare, and stopped selling cigarettes. So you'll see organizations doing more for their communities. So because there's a lot of tie to higher purpose and healthier organizations and healthy people. At Sindelini, every person in the organization has a personal purpose. So my purpose is to help an ever-increasing number of people live life at their best mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And so this idea of having purpose is our clients are more purposeful. We were acquired by Heidrick & Struggles some years ago, and we helped them create their purpose, which is to help their clients change the world one leadership team at a time. And that inspires all of us to do things better. So those are some of the things you'd see.
Yeah, yeah. That it goes back to what your opening statement was, is culture is the shadow of the leader. And if you've got a leader who is clear on purpose, whether it be their own as well as the team and the organization's, just imagine the contagion that comes from that awareness in the interactions with others. I love that.
And when you can have high purpose and healthy culture – as an organization, you're unstoppable. That's why we have 21 clients in America's most admired, because they've done that, and that's what you can do.
Yeah. So last question for you. It's probably the hardest. Just kidding. What's the best way for people to connect with you and see what you're up to and the work that you are doing and what Sindelini is doing?
Sure. Well, the firm is Sindelini, so it's L – Sen at sendelaney.com, S-E-N-N-D-E-L-A-N-E-Y, or you can just send it to me at larry@themoodelevator.com.
All right, very good. And while we had that little technical glitch, I was letting people know some of the great stuff that they could find on themoodelevator.com. And for those of you who want to continue the conversation, which I can't imagine those of you who wouldn't, join us over on Work Trends Twitter chat. The hashtag is Work Trends. Thank you, Larry, for really helping us get, I think, a really unique insight into culture and what we can do to positively shape it, shift it, and make it better for everyone in terms of getting things done and enjoying the work experience. So thank you.
And I want to thank the community you have there, because you're all bonded and wanting to make a positive difference in the world and organization. So I thank you all for joining in this wonderful movement.
That's a great way to end it. So thank you, Larry. And we will, quote unquote, see you online over on Twitter.
Great. See you there.
All right, everybody. Bye. Head on over to Twitter, and we'll continue the interaction with Larry in the Work Trends Twitter chat. Take care.
So how was that, daughter?
That was great. And
okay.
Yeah. All right. I think we're good, Larry.
Good. So okay, great. Well, thank you. I had fun with you.
Good.
Yeah, that's great. Okay.
Yeah, it's an honor to hear your insights. So we'll continue that over on the Twitter chat.
Okay, we'll see you there then. Okay, bye.